Hi, this is Maria Olson. You may know me from Trophy Heads or Starry Eyes and maybe Paranormal Activity 3. And I want to welcome you to Anthony T's Horror Show because it's an awesome show.
Hi, my name is Jessica Cameron, and you're listening to Anthony T's Horror Show.
Hey, fellow horror fans. This is Troy Escamilla, the director of Party Night and Mrs. Claus, and you are listening to Anthony T's Horror Show. Enjoy.
Welcome to another edition of Anthony T's Horror Show. I'm Anthony T. In this edition, I will be talking to director Paul Ragsdale and producer Angelica D'Alba, as we're going to talk about their upcoming film, Slasherette Party, which is currently in production. And in What's Anthony T Watching, I will be talking about a film that recently premiered on Shudder. I may have mentioned it on Twitter, at Anthony T's Horror Show. You need to see this film. It is just so awesome. And the fact that it stars a wrestler from my favorite wrestling promotion, All Elite Wrestling. Because this podcast here is All Elite. I'll go more into that in that segment. But first, the news. First off, there's an article on Dread Central which really caught my attention. And probably for reasons in which I don't want this to happen, please. Director Ari Aster, who's known for mostly Hereditary and Midsommar, has recently revealed, according to this Dread Central article, that his new nightmare will be, wait for it, 4 hours long. Do we really need to see a 4 hour horror film? Seriously. It's bad enough the last time we had a lengthy horror film, which almost went 3 hours, was It Chapter 2. Don't get me wrong. I liked the movie, but the film was way too long. More like 20, 30 minutes too long. So, I know Ari probably could pull it off, but do we really need a 4 hour horror film? Seriously? Because things can go drastically wrong with that much length of time. The film is being kind of described, according to the article, as a zonky nightmare comedy, and an anxiety comedy, and an absurdist evil comedy. Which begs the question, again, do we really need a 4 hour movie if it's gonna be like that? Because it'll just wear thin after an hour and a half or so. This is a bad idea, Ari. Do not do this. Please change your mind. Make it to 2.5 hour film like you always do, and we'll be fine. But we do not need a 4 hour horror film. I'm sorry, but I don't need to see one horror film that takes up a third of my day. Unless it's a really big documentary, why do we need a 4 hour horror slash comedy? I just don't think this is going to work. And really, quite frankly, this might be a bad idea. Because after a while, everything gets repetitive. And you guessed it, you're bored wanting the film to end. Don't get me wrong. When I saw It Chapter 2, I liked It Chapter 2. But It was too long. Please. I do not want to sit there and watch a horror film for 4 hours. I would like to see 2 horror films in 4 hours, but not 1 horror film for 4 hours. Just saying. Now in convention news. We finally figure out what's going to happen with TerrorCon. They originally canceled their show a couple months ago due to the ongoing health crisis. And the show has been rescheduled. Kind of. And I put it loosely because my first thoughts on this news was RIP TerrorCon, RIP New England Horror Convention Scene. Because TerrorCon and Rhode Island Comic Con are doing a super show to make up for both TerrorCon and Rhode Island Comic Con getting canceled this year. That event is scheduled to take place June 18th through the 20th, 2021. This personally shocked me because I was clearly expecting another TerrorCon next year. But the fact that they combined both the canceled TerrorCon show from this year and the canceled Rhode Island Comic Con from this year, meaning there's only one horror convention in New England. Because in all intents and purposes, that TerrorCon event has just turned into pretty much a Rhode Island Comic Con show. And they also announced that they will be also running another edition of Rhode Island Comic Con from November 5th to the 7th. This is truly sad. Because now in the New England area, we have only one horror convention, and that's CT Horror Fest. Don't get me wrong, I love CT Horror Fest. I think everyone who runs CT Horror Fest does a great job. But the only problem I have with that convention is it's only one day. Meaning, the New England horror convention scene has all been dwindled down to a one-day convention. It's sad. It is really sad. 2020 has claimed a lot of conventions. Even before this health crisis, we had conventions folding. I've never seen a business area where things all folded at the exact same time. I'll go more into this in another episode. Because this will go on and on and on and on. And quite frankly, I have an interview to get to. So I will save this and table it for another episode. Because I really believe I need to share my thoughts on this. Because this is really sad that we now, in New England, have only one horror convention. It's just amazing. Every convention has either folded or merged into a super show. With that, that is the news. Every day there's a family struggling with hospital bills to care for their sick child who is fighting an illness. There's a woman who is fighting breast cancer and is having trouble making ends meet while paying for their treatment. And there are burn victims that are going through treatments to heal their deep wounds. There is a charity in the horror community that helps these people. Scares That Care is an organization that helps families deal with the bills for their child. They help women get the treatment they need to fight breast cancer. And they help people who are dealing with severe burns get the help they need to heal. Scares That Care is a 100% volunteer organization and 501c3 nonprofit charity that is dedicated to helping these people in fighting real monsters. To find out more information or to donate to Scares That Care, you can go to www.scaresthatcare.org. Every donation helps Scares That Care fight real monsters. Besides Anthony T's horror show, you can also listen to these other fine podcasts on the Doc Discussions Network. Doc Discussions, hosted by Phil Perrone and Michael Darwin. You Know Nothing, Jon Snow, a Game of Thrones podcast. Bullets, Brothels, and Bots, a Westworld podcast. Halloween Boutique, Psychotronic Reviews. And Searching for American Gods. You can find Doc Discussions on the web at www.docdiscussions.com. And Doc Discussions is also available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify.
Hey guys, this is Steve and Christina. I am the founder, owner, creator, and host of Super Retro Throwback Reviews. Are you looking for the best movie reviews, music reviews, video game reviews, and Comic-Con coverage all around? Well then, look no further. Definitely check out Super Retro Throwback Reviews on YouTube and our new audio podcast, the new and improved Super Retro Throwback Reviews Audio Files version 2.0 on the following media distributors: Podbean, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, iTunes, and Spotify.
Class is over, John. Time for something new and improved.
Welcome back. I'm here with director Paul Rogsdale and producer Angelica D'Alba as they're here to talk about their upcoming film, Slasherette Party. How are you doing today?
Doing great.
Awesome.
Thanks for having us.
What made you both want to get into the film business?
I've toyed with filmmaking since I was like 10 years old, you know, just using a VHS camera, making movies with my cousins and my friends and stuff. I didn't really start taking it seriously until like late high school. Then I started taking multimedia classes and stuff like that. And I always loved being a cameraman. Actually, that's where I first started shooting and then editing. And then I didn't really know what a director was really when I was in my teens. And then, you know, I think my cousins started putting me on to Stanley Kubrick and Scorsese and really showed me what a director does. And so, okay, well, yeah, that's what I want to be. So hey, I started like in the teens, early teens, just making movies with my friends.
And I stumbled into filmmaking on accident. Paul and I actually met in college taking film classes. I was just experimenting, taking various random classes because, you know, typical early 20-something-year-old didn't really know what I wanted to major in college. So I was just taking a lot of different type of arts, theater, playwriting, classes like that. And I stumbled into filmmaking and met Paul. Even though I stuck through the film program, I still didn't have a desire to become a filmmaker. But I made a lot of good friends, Paul included. And once we started dating and we kind of became adults together, we decided to start tackling some projects together. So I kind of just joined in as a late starter, but it's been so much fun. So I really stuck with it, even though it wasn't my original intention.
The first I've heard of both of you was back in 2018 when you released a film called Streets of Vengeance. Tell everyone about that film.
Streets of Vengeance is a female revenge movie, kind of modeled off the early 90s, late 80s, Cinemax erotic thrillers combined with Savage Streets, Nightmare on Elm Street, Dream Warriors. That's a lot of elements combined, but at its core, it's a female revenge movie about a ex-adult film star who is targeted by a misogynistic cult called The Sword, who hate women and women showing their bodies and stuff. And so she's targeted, and they attempt to kill her, and they videotape it on the internet. She doesn't die. She comes back, puts a group of girls together, and to get their revenge. And like I said, it's done in an 80s style. It has an aesthetic to it, like a Dario Argento movie, a giallo movie. And we put that together and it released it in 2018 through Slasher Video.
Why did you guys go for a retro feel for that film?
Well, first of all, we're both 80s babies, so the 80s genre is just something that appeals to us. Being that we grew up in that era and those are the types of movies we watched growing up, and they just kind of hold that special place in our heart. And a lot of our friends and the people in our community that we kind of hang out with have always had a passion for those types of movies. So we thought it would be something fun to experiment with that and see how close we could get to recreating that feel and that vibe of that 80s kind of sleazy, gritty type feel, that movie.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, right. Like Savage Streets And also the Dream Warriors, I mentioned, was an inspiration. The way they're dressed in that movie, the way they're dressed in Savage Streets, Girl Gang, I kind of wanted to do that, the way Linda Blair and her gang kind of look. I wanted to do that. Lost Boys 2 is actually an inspiration. So I wanted to take all that, try to put it together in a girl group, in a revenge movie. And yeah, I just kind of went from there, and then we just took a bunch of inspirations, like from Kelly Bundy and her children, things like that, and it just became really fun. It just made the movie a lot more interesting to give it that 80s aesthetic. It's something to add, another dimension to add to our female revenge movie.
Both of you directed that film. What made the both of you decide that you both wanted to direct Street of Vengeance?
I came up with the story. It was a vehicle for the star, Delana McKinney. We'd worked with her before on a more of a dramatic comedy. It's like a French New Wave comedy. And we wanted to do something totally different. And I came up with the idea. I always wanted to do a revenge movie. And I told Angie about it, and she loved the idea. And she really wanted to get down with the wardrobe and the aesthetics. And we started watching movies like Miss 45, and Savage Streets, like I said. And, yeah, we just really got excited by it, about all the possibilities. And, Angie, just really did an amazing job with, creating the world and the wardrobe of the movie.
I think being that we created it together, I mean, being that we're together 24/7, we have the luxury to be able to talk creative and talk about projects all the time. So it kind of felt natural for us, being that we created it together and talked about it every day, and we're changing the story and changing the characters and rewriting and just coming up with ideas together. We just felt like we were both kind of equally, even though our names are listed under various credits, we're equally both writers, directors, editors, producers, because we're so independent. When you're this independent, you kind of don't really have a choice. You do have to do everything. So it's just both of our baby, I guess.
Yeah, definitely, because we're a partnership. So I have the nostalgia factor attached to it, and Angie has the fashion and the aesthetics and the know-how of how to actually make it a reality. You know, I don't know how to make it a reality. So that's what makes our team, our partnership, so lucrative and so successful, I feel.
What made you want to have the adult film industry as a backdrop for the film?
The adult film industry background for the film, that was kind of partly inspired by 52 Pickup, the film with Roy Scheider. And I thought that was a unexplored background for a revenge movie. A lot of times you would see revenge movies revolving like strippers or hookers, and there'd be, you know, they get wronged and then they would have to get revenge. So I wanted something like that. But, you know, strippers and hookers had been done already. Strip to Kill, you know, another one that was a big influence on us. So I thought the adult film industry would be a good industry to tackle, to have the main character be in. Because I wanted her to do something, to have a job, a profession that would be looked down upon by, you know, other people in society. Maybe they wouldn't believe her as far as cause what she does for a living. Because that was a big... was a big aspect for me, for the character. I wanted her to be like a Marilyn Monroe type, someone who was doing something that maybe was a little scandalous to normal people. And then it just actually started organically from there, having an adult industry and then actually doing research on other adult film stars like Joanna Angel. And she actually went through, you know, a terrible abuse by her hands of her boyfriend, her ex-boyfriend now. I just lent to a lot of things we can comment on in the movie. So really it just started out as just a vehicle, another profession to have in the film that would seem so 80s, but yet had never really been done before, not in the way we wanted to do it.
I also noticed that you cast Joanne Angel in several adult film actresses and cameos in the film. What made you want to cast those people in Streets of Vengeance?
Well, it was really more of a wish list. Like I said, we're really independent. At that point, we hadn't really worked with anybody really with a name that anyone in society would really kind of recognize. And being that the story was based on the adult film industry, we felt to add a little bit of realism to that, to cast real adult film stars would just, oh my gosh, that would just give the whole thing credibility. And it's kind of funny because if people aren't familiar with adult films or adult film stars, they wouldn't catch that. I guess it's more of like a little special surprise for anybody who is fans of Sophie and Alexis and Joanna. And we just threw the invite out there and we were asking if they'd be interested and hoping, we expected them to say no, but they were actually really friendly and open to the opportunity. So it was a dream come true for us to actually get real adult film stars. We could ask them questions and they really got to explain to us the industry and what it was really like. And so we just felt that it added that extra layer of credibility.
Yeah, like Angie said, like it was never part of the plan. Like Joanna Angel, like I used her as inspiration for a character, and I used her story and her background as aspects I want to add to a character, but I never thought in a million years that she would ever be in her own, in one of our films. Same with Ginger Lynn too. Like we saw her on the cover of New Wave Hookers, and I was like, what if this movie was a Brian De Palma thriller instead of a porn movie, like with this type of look? So that was our guiding force, and that was what we told Delana we wanted her to look like. So to actually have them in the movie is really crazy for us. I'm still, you know, not over that. It was never part of the plan, but yeah, it just added a lot of credibility to us, and it was awesome to actually have the inspirations in the movie. And so that's what, yeah, it made it seem like, oh, it's a no-brainer. But, you know, we're very humble and very modest. That was not part of the original intention.
This leads us to Slasherette Party, in which you guys made a fake trailer to showcase in the film Streets of Vengeance. What gave you the idea to put a fake trailer in Streets of Vengeance?
Well, the idea came with the idea to do the wraparound, the all night long TV show format. And that's inspired by, of course, USA Up All Night with Ron this year. And we had actually done that format in a previous film called Cinco de Mayo. And we did a fake trailer for that one, too, called Dance Till You Die. And it became such a hit with people like us who grew up in the 80s and 90s who remembered that show. And they really dug the format. And they really liked Dance Till You Die as well. They really wanted it. So many people have asked us to make that into a movie, but I'm not sure about that one yet. But so for this one, yeah, we did Slasherette Party because we wanted to do a cabin in the woods type slasher movie. And we thought that would fit good with Streets of Vengeance. And same thing. Got a lot of great feedback for it. People asking for us to do a full length feature of Slasherette Party. And now that we are doing Slasherette Party as an actual film, we will probably do another fake trailer, probably. But yeah, that's how it started out. It's just a fake trailer with no intention of making it into an actual feature film.
Now, speaking of Slasherette Party, tell everyone about that film that's coming out soon.
Slasherette Party is about a newlywed or bride-to-be with her girls, her bridesmaids, celebrating her bachelorette party in the cabin in the woods. Also tagging along is her fiancé and his groomsmen, and they're having their own bachelor party as well. So it's a joint bachelor and bachelorette party. And, of course, it gets attacked by a killer attempting to crash the party, wanting the girls for himself. So it's definitely an 80s slasher-inspired film. Sleepaway Camp, Friday the 13th, of course, The Burning, movies like that. But also with a little bit of a tiny giallo tint to it.
Yeah, that's what I kind of got with the trailer as well. It looked like it was going to be some sort of Italian slasher film, which I am a fan of. Now, what films influence Slasherette Party?
Right off the bat, I would say Tenebrae, which has always been and it was also an influence for Streets of Vengeance, of course. Rosemary's Baby, I would say. Sleepaway Camp 2. Sleepaway Camp 1 and Part 2, I should say. And I would say Friday the 13th, Part 4 for me.
How did both of you come up with the story of the film?
The story came, like I said, we started off as a trailer, and I was just looking for a basic, you know, slasher in the woods type story. A friend of ours, Stephen Pettit Jr., who was in Cinco de Mayo, said he had an idea, and I was looking for an idea for a trailer. He had an idea. It was about, you know, cabin in the woods. It was a little more supernatural. So we kind of took it from there and just based it off of this very, very, you know, thin premise of girls in the woods. And the idea of a bachelor, I was trying to think of why would girls be in the woods? You know, what would they be doing? And a bachelorette party came to mind, and I was kind of, we were kind of shocked that no one had done a bachelorette party in the woods kind of a thing, a slasher movie. And it just seemed to fit right into, the '80s if it had been made. And then, we went through a bunch of names of what to call it. And, of course, it kept getting more and more ridiculous. And so we settled on a pun, slash Lorette party, because it sounded ridiculous. And that was like, well, that's it. That's the one we're going with.
We never thought that this would ever turn into a feature film. We just wanted it to be a fun, quick, fake trailer. And, well,
yeah, the fans
gotta give the people what they want.
Yeah, they demanded it. So we had to do it.
What's the casting like for Slasherette Party?
We did have several people in mind already. We tend to have a pretty tight-knit community of actors that we've worked with over the last 10 years. And we like to keep as much as we can within our community. We did hold auditions for a couple of other roles that we weren't quite sure if we had someone in mind that fit. So we did do auditions. But right from the get-go, we already knew we wanted the lead to go to Molly Souza, who plays Bree. She's the lead character. And a lot of the girls, we already had all the girls in mind. And some of the male roles we did have open. There was a little couple of changes. Even right up until a couple days before shooting, we did do a couple little changes with some of the male roles. Even before we started shooting the film, we knew we wanted to collaborate with Drew Marvick. And we wanted to bring Ginger Lynn Allen back, because we had worked with her in Streets of Vengeance, and we just loved her so much. So we did write special roles for Ginger and Drew. And, yeah, most of the characters, we already knew who we wanted. There was only auditions for a couple of small roles.
Right, yeah, most of the girls did come from the trailer. So Molly Souza, Brooke Morris, Vanessa Mata, Shailene Prasad, they were in the original trailer, and so we brought them back. And then, yeah, we added like another role here and there, just to round it out. And, we just cast, a few more actors from our area and then, took them up to the cabin, and we were shooting there for 3 days straight.
What made you want to cast Drew Marvick, director of the crazy slasher Pool Party Massacre, as he really brings an eccentric and fun personality to each of his characters?
Yeah, well, I think you said it right there. He has the fun, eccentric personality.
Yeah, we love Drew.
Yeah, Drew is an awesome person. He's exactly what he seems like through his social media. He seems like a fun and eccentric person, and he is. He's got nothing but amazing, crazy experiences and stories. We actually were making our films at the same time. I believe he was making Pool Party Massacre at the same time that we were filming Streets of Vengeance. Drew is an independent hustler just like us. He had hit the convention scene and was taking Pool Party Massacre all over the United States. He was setting up booths and going to all kinds of cons and just interacting with bands and just getting out there and connecting with people as much as possible. He had come to our area. He had come to Sacramento and reached out to us about sharing a booth space. And we had finished both of us had finished our projects at that point. So he was like, hey, how do you guys feel about sharing some of my booth space? You guys can set up some Streets of Vengeance stuff. I'll have my Pool Party Massacre stuff. So we did that, and it was just such a cool experience. We got to talk with him and get to know him a little bit, and we were like, oh, man, we should definitely collaborate on something. We have so much in common. And he was like, yeah, I'm always down, you know. I'm always down to do any indie horror stuff. And just from that, we were like, oh, yeah, we have to work with him again somehow. So that really prompted us to write that role for him.
Yeah, this is a perfect role. I mean, he loves playing, you know, murderers and killers and slashers and stuff like that. So we took a trip out to Las Vegas to meet up with him and Ginger Lynn. They both live out there. and we shot a little promo video with them and talked to them about the project and signed them on at the same time. And it's been really fun to work with Drew. He grew up in the 80s just like us, and he loves horror movies, and he grinds, and he's an independent filmmaker, and he loves fun horror movies just like we do. Like, that's the same thing that we wanted to achieve. So, yeah, to put Drew in there, yeah, it was a perfect match.
What made you want to bring Ginger Lynn back for Slasherette Party?
Ginger Lynn, when we shot with her for Streets of Vengeance, that was probably like our favorite scene that's in that movie. To see her with Delana McKinney, the Mila character, their little scene, and then to see her with Brian, the main villain, and their little scene that they have, it's just like some of the best acting that's in that entire movie. I mean, she was just so good, so professional. We got to know her and talk to her, had dinner with her, and she told us all these amazing stories, and she was just so welcoming and just an amazing person that we were like, well, we need to write a bigger role for you. And she said she would do it. She would do anything we wanted to do, and just built that relationship. And now it's just a great friendship that we have with her. We love her so much.
Yeah, she is an 80s icon, and her fans still reach out to us and are like, thank you for showcasing like a whole nother side of her skills, because so many people are fans of her acting in horror films.
Yeah, she's a real actress.
Yeah, she's a real actress. And so people are just loving what she's doing now. And she was just so sweet in person. I don't think any of us were prepared for how generous and kind she was. We thought she'd be nice, but she's just beyond. She just immediately takes you on like you're one of her family.
Yeah.
And when we went out to Vegas, she was like, oh, yeah, come to my house. You guys can stay here for a couple of days. Everything's fine, and she was just super accommodating and sweet. And like Paul said, her acting in Streets of Vengeance was so good, and she was just so professional that we just had a great time with her and wanted to bring her back again.
Yeah, I was just watching that scene play out as a director, is just like in utter awe, just seeing how good she is. And, how she's in mainstream horror movies and a lot of Rob Zombie movies and stuff, but I don't think she gets to really showcase her acting chops, as much as she does in our films. And I'm pretty proud. We're pretty proud about that.
Angela, what made you decide to get away from the director's chair on Slasherette Party?
Ooh, that's a good question. I don't really think of it that way. Like we had mentioned earlier, since we're so independent, Paul and I share every role almost equally.
Mm-hmm.
So directing, producing, editing, all that stuff, we both share the same amount of duties with those roles. I guess for this one, I don't know why we chose to do it that way.
I mean it's kind of like the Coen brothers situation. Like they say Joe Coen directs it and Ethan Coen produces, but yet they both directed. That's kind of like how it is for her. And actually in the end it'll probably just end up the credits being written and directed by both of us, because it really is. I think it's just for namesake. When we talk to people, it's like, I'm the director, she's the producer, but yeah, we do it all together. So that's probably how it ended up being, and ultimately the title or the credit will be written and directed by both.
We don't really have a crew, we don't really have like funds and finance. This is the biggest project we've done financially through a fundraising process that we did, but prior to that, we didn't really have like a crew or money or anything to be working with. So that's why we shared every role pretty much equally. And even now, even though we had some funds come through for this project, we still shared the same role. So if I need to pick up a microphone, or if I need to help Paul make a decision on something, or if I need to step in and with some additional support, we're both doing all the same exact things that we would have done on any of our previous or any of our future projects. So
yeah, because even though if I'm right there with the cinematographer Dan, our friend, I always field everything back to Angie. It's like, what do you think? I think it looks good like this. And what's your opinion? She's like, yeah. Or she's like, no, there's something hideous in the background there that none of you guys are even noticing. It's like, oh, well, thank you. You know, that kind of stuff. It's that partnership that really, and I think it's the thing that makes us different from a lot of other filmmaking groups, because there's two of us and we both are on the same page, but yet we're kind of attacking the same thing from different angles.
I noticed when doing some research on this film that you named your female characters based out of WWE wrestlers. What made you decide to do that?
Yeah. Well, we're both big WWE wrestling fans, which I think is kind of surprising for a lot of people. But yeah, both of us are equally as into wrestling and WWE in particular. Obviously, being a woman, I tend to favor more of the female wrestlers, and I really love what they have going on. And we just thought it would be something funny and that most people probably wouldn't pick up on, but it was just something silly for us that we liked.
Also, it really helped me when I was writing the script. If I named the character, you know, Mandy, I could kind of hear her dialogue and Mandy Rose's voice. So that really helped. It's a good tool to use. I mean, because I do that anyway when I name characters, but I'll name them after other people, like real people that I know. So using the wrestling motif, because even the male characters are named after wrestlers too. You have Dolph and you have Drew. I'm sorry, you have Dean and Seth from the Shield, and yeah, Brett. So there's those. And plus, you know, it is sound like great 80s names already. So it's like, oh, it's perfect. You know, even though it has nothing to do with wrestling. We love wrestling so much. It's like, oh, it's a little nod to our love of the WWE.
How far into production is this film in?
We're almost done. We were actually supposed to film the final scenes in March. Unfortunately, due to the current pandemic situation we have going on, our final shoots got put on hold. We want to make sure that everyone in the film feels safe, and we're not going to pick up that final production until we have a little bit more answers and clarity on what the situation is, and just really want to ensure everyone's safety before we move forward. But we, in the meantime, are really busy with the editing. As we said, like, how far would you say we're 95% done shooting?
Yeah, I would say the shooting is 95% done. We just completed the rough cut of the film yesterday. And so now that's all done. We just need these few missing shots. And, yeah, they probably comprise about, you know, 5 to 7% of the film, and maybe even less. There's only a few scenes. So once we get those, you know, we'll be ready to go. We wanted to, you know, we had projected this thing to be done at the end of May, back when we were going to shoot in March. But now, you know, it might be the end of summer, the way things are going. But as far as the timeline goes, the editing, it's the rough cut is complete. We just need those missing scenes to plug into the timeline.
Will this be a direct to Blu-ray release, or can we expect a film festival run?
We're definitely going to do a couple of festivals. We want to go to them. We actually want to be in attendance. Before with Streets of Vengeance, I was submitting to like festivals that, you know, I was not going to be, we're not going to be in person for. And, you know, that's fine. You know, I got screened in like New York and stuff. And then, I think, Tennessee and yeah, Portland. So that was cool, you know, and it's a few other places, but you know, we really wanted to be there. So with this one, if we are going to do festivals, we do want to go in person. And we want to go to Florida, we want to go to Texas, you know, we want to go either further up north in Seattle, things like that. But for the Indiegogo, we did do Indiegogo campaign, and that does include Blu-ray screeners. So we'll be giving those to our backers. But for everyone else, there's only a limited quantity being made for those. So everyone else, they might have to wait a little bit and until we showcase it and present it in a few screenings around California and hopefully around the rest of the country. And then eventually we will release it. Hopefully, you know, we'll do another distribution deal with Slasher Video and do an Amazon Prime release as well.
Now, when I was shopping on Fast Custom Tees recently, when I picked up the Saska Sisters shirt, I saw a shirt of Slasherette Party. What made you decide to sell a shirt of the film before its release?
That was, because we wanted the shirt to be released so it could be in time for the premiere. So people can buy a shirt and have it and wear it to our premiere that we had planned on doing here in our hometown in Modesto, just for the fans. And then, to raise more funds to get these last shots done, things like that. But of course, you know, we had to put everything on hold for the pandemic. So they're still there, for people to purchase, and, any money being raised, of course, you know, just goes to the completion of the film. Not that, you know, it's in danger of not being complete, but, you know, that's what we're using the funds for. And also we just love Fast Custom t-shirts. They did such a good shirt for Streets of Vengeance too. I love the design. I love their work. They're fast and dependable. And, we'll miss them again because they were just so good to us before.
I love that you were looking for a Soska Sister shirt too. We met them at a convention in Sacramento and they were just so sweet. And it's a funny fact, we actually gave them a copy of Streets of Vengeance.
Yeah, we gave them a copy and talked to them for a good long time over there in Sacramento. So, yeah, they're cool.
Now, is Fast Custom Tees the only place where you can pick up the shirt?
At the moment, yes. We'll probably do another t-shirt run because we wanted a full-color t-shirt like we did with Streets of Vengeance previously, before. So we probably will. I'm not sure who will go through for that one. Probably Merch Monster based out here in the Bay Area. But for now, yeah, Fast Custom T-shirts. That's where you can get your Slasherette Party t-shirt and support the film.
After this film, are there any other plans for other films in the future?
Yeah, we're actually planning our next feature already. It's a wrestling, 80s female wrestling movie combined with heavy metal, combined with demons and Satan satanic worship. It's called Wrestle Babes and the Heavy Metal Demon Massacre, working title. It might be a little too long. It's a film that we've been talking about for a long time, because we want to do something wrestling, of course. Again, the Dream Warriors is a big influence. I love teams of people, teams of girls, women coming together and defeating demonic monsters. That's something we're writing right now. I already have the outline done. Our most likely we'll be starting the script in the next coming weeks here. And prepping that.
Wrestling in horror seems to be a trend lately, with Wrestle Massacre coming out, Powerbomb coming out. Are you planning to cast wrestlers for that film?
Again, it'd probably be like the Streets of Vengeance thing, where, you know, we want wrestlers, but we don't know.
Yeah, it's on our wish list. We'll see if we can work some magic. Nope. No plans. Nobody signed on as of right now, but
no. We'll
definitely be looking for some people to give it that authenticity.
Yeah, we do have a few eyes on a few wrestlers, because there's a wrestling organization here in the Bay Area, and we see them on their Instagram and stuff. So we're kind of keeping our eyes on them. Not wish list. If we could get them, that'd be great. So. I think it's going to turn out the same way like Streets of Vengeance. So I think we're going to shoot our shot with a couple of people and, get lucky, get surprised.
Now, where can they find both of you and your films on social media and the web?
We're both on Instagram, AP Films, A_P_Films on Instagram. We're also on Facebook, AP Productions on Facebook. You can look us up and we'll constantly posting pictures from set, behind the scenes videos, trailers. And, if you want to talk to us, shoot us a DM and, if you want to discuss anything about filmmaking, we're always here.
A lot of our previous works are on YouTube as well. So some of our short films and even our fake trailers. So if you wanted to check that out, you can check out our YouTube as well.
Right. Yeah. YouTube, just search Paul Ragsdale or Angelica D'Alba. Or search Streets of Vengeance. You'll find our previous two features and one of our short films, Nighttime Creatures. That's the last short film that we did. Has a few people that are actually in Slasherette Party as well. Nina Lene Kent and Vanessa Mata, Daniel James Moody, Robert Holloway, and Luis Maya.
I want to thank you, Paul and Angela, for coming on my podcast.
Oh, thank you.
Have a good day and stay safe.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Thanks a lot, Anthony.
You're welcome.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
This is Carrie.
This is Billy.
This is Mr. Poe.
And we are from A Podcast From Beneath. You can catch us every Wednesday wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
For the latest news and information on Anthony T's Horror Show, you can check out Anthony T's Horror Show on social media platforms at Anthony T's Horror Show on Facebook, Instagram, and Slasher app at Anthony T's Horror on Twitter. Anthony T's Horror Show can be found on YouTube as well at youtube.com/AnthonyTherber. You can find Doc Discussions on the web at www.docdiscussions.com. And you can find Anthony T's Horror Show on the web at anthonytshorrorshow.blogspot.com. Please note, the review contains spoilers for the film Scare Package. I do apologize, but I got just too carried away with my thoughts on the film. So, what's Anthony T watching? Now, when thinking of a film to talk about in this segment, I really did not want to talk about another 2020 film after the last time where this segment went over 10 minutes because of me talking about the abomination known as Glenn Danzig's Verotica. I really did not want to do another film that was released this year. I really needed that break, but the fact that a film that just came out on Shudder, which I recently saw on the last drive-in, had an all-elite wrestler in the film. Now, before I get into the film and everything, I have to tell everyone, I love all-elite wrestling. That's why I think this podcast is all-elite. And hereby, there is a new rule here on what's Anthony T watching. If an all-elite wrestler is in a horror film, yours truly will be talking about it in this segment of the show. No ifs, ands, or buts. Can't help it. I'm a huge fan of All Elite Wrestling. And the WWE pretty much sucks. So when I heard the news that Dustin Runnels, aka the natural Dustin Rhodes, was going to be in Scare Package, I knew I had to see this film automatically. Because, once again, I'm a huge fan of All Elite Wrestling. And to my surprise, Scare Package is an excellent film. I managed to catch its world premiere on Shudder during the last drive-in, so I tweeted about it over on Anthony T's Horror Show's official Twitter page at Anthony T's Horror. Because, well, I tweet pretty much almost every movie that airs on the last drive-in, which currently wrapped up its second season. Hoping for a third season. Fingers crossed. Because we need more of the last drive-in. Now, enough of that. Let's get to my thoughts on this film. I did say this was an excellent film, and I'm going to tell you why. First off, this film has the smartest character in horror history. That's right. This film has the smartest character in horror history. Watch the opening segment of Scare Package, and you'll know who the smartest character in horror history is. You may not believe me at first, but watch this film to the end and you'll see why he is the smartest character in horror history. I've never seen a character take down the villain with such ease. Literally. This character, who appears in a couple of segments in the film, including his own at the beginning, takes down a main villain in one of the segments without breaking a sweat. for that. That is just pure insanity. Because you do not see horror characters do that. Second of all, this film has quite possibly one of the dumbest main characters in horror history. That's right, Ratchet! Because that character I loved so much. Between him and the smartest character in horror history, those two characters alone make this movie very entertaining. You can put mediocre segments in between the segments of these two characters, and this film would still be good. Literally. Because I loved the way the screenplay really made those characters different and funny. That's what makes a horror comedy work so well. And this film, besides that, balances the humor and the horror aspects very well. In fact, it's probably only one bad segment in the whole film, which is very good. Because with a horror anthology film, it's a very tough to put out a good number of really great segments. This film has at least 5 great segments, 2 good ones, and 1 that failed. That's what makes a great horror anthology. Is this the best movie of the year? No. Another thing that I really enjoyed about Scare Package was the fact that this film felt like a love letter to horror fans. You get a lot of great things in this film. You get references to Halloween, Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, and hell, Joe Bob Briggs appears in this film. That's right. Week 8 of The Last Drive-In was pretty much films in which Joe Bob Briggs appeared in. And he does his cameo in Scare Package very well, as I really love the dynamic between him and Ratchet. It's just gold. This film is a riot. If you have Shudder, definitely watch this film right after the end of this podcast, because it's very great, plus the fact that the last segment is just pure insanity. This film will probably be in my top 10 list of 2020, that's for sure, because it's just enough great segments that really makes this a top 5 film at the moment on my rankings. So definitely check out Scare Package on Shudder. It is a great film that provides a lot of laughs, over-the-top gore, and a fun experience. You can see it either the way it's intended to be seen, or watch the Last Drive-In episode that features Scare Package, because both of them are just as equally fun to watch. Now, on the official website of Anthony T's Horror Show, the latest rankings for June are up in terms of my best films of 2020 so far. And yes, you can definitely expect Scare Package to be up there on that list, because that is just such a great film. But you can check that out over at anthonytshorrorshow.blogspot.com. Next episode, I will be joined with Phil Perone of Doc Discussions podcast, as we're going to talk about our favorite Vinegar Syndrome films. This is an episode I've been waiting to do for a while, but finally got a chance to do it recently. So that will be next episode. And I'm hoping to do something special for episode 47. Stay tuned if that happens. With that, I want to thank you for listening to this podcast. Stay safe and support indie horror.